morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of our listeners all over the world. I'm Barry Miller, your host of the Revamp Podcast. Today, I have Frank Devine, the head of revenue operations for RevOps at Hungry Marketplace, as our guest. It's really exciting to have him. I've seen some of what he's written, and he seems to have lots of thoughts, and I'm really interested in deep diving into his career and his background. To talk about what it is to be the first head of RevOps or to lead and bring on a revenue operations career or position to a company. So this is a really good podcast if you're interested in hearing about how you can get into RevOps, or if you're into you are a sole person in the RevOps role in your company, how to deal with some of the challenges and how to overcome those challenges. So Frank, welcome to the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks, Barry. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So I think in order to really understand where you are now, I think we have to take a step back even deeper than other than in other podcasts where people just say like some positions where they've been. But maybe you could tell me about your career, about which companies you worked at, names, but what type of companies you worked at, what your positions were there, and how you progressed throughout your career.
Awesome. Yeah, happy to. So like we said, I'm Frank Devine. I run the RevOps function here at Hungry Marketplace. First in function, so building, creating, developing a lot of stuff from scratch. How did I get into RevOps? Good question. I never expected to be working in the business world, let alone sales or RevOps, things like that. I went to school to become a police officer. I have my degree in criminal justice, and one thing led to another after graduation, and I ended up in the Silicon Valley as an SDR, making 100 cold calls a day and trying to figure out what it's like to work in the business world. So the first company that took a chance on me brought me in as an SDR, and they're like, yeah, we'll teach you the ropes. We're a food tech startup, and it's going to be a really cool process. So I joined that company. It was called Eat Club. I'm very fond of that company. Will always be grateful to them for kicking off my career. So did SDR for 7 or 8 months, bashing my head against the wall many nights at home, trying to figure out why I was so bad at cold calling or why my emails weren't getting responses, and finally broke through and ended up getting promoted into an account executive role. So I was doing full cycle selling and closed about $1 million in business before I moved on to take the first role as the SDR manager. So something that hadn't existed before, felt pretty confident building off of my success to that point in prospecting and lead generation and strategy and helping other people who are breaking into sales find success quickly, because it can just be such a meat grinder as an SDR. So was the first person as the SDR manager, did that for about a year, and then they had a position to open up into training and enablement. So I became our head trainer. I ran all the onboarding. I developed training calendars. I spent a lot of time in classroom settings and in virtual settings, getting people engaged, getting them pumped to go and make cold calls, which is pretty, big challenge to get somebody excited to do that. But had a lot of success in that. As I was going through this process, though, sort of moving through different roles at Eat Club, I was spending more and more time getting into the systems that we were using to make sure that they were user-friendly, to make sure that the CRM made sense, that it was logical for our new hires, for our existing teams, and as we added complexity to our product, as we added new product lines, et cetera. So I sort of became a self-taught CRM admin. I was working a lot with our one sales ops guy, who turned out to be a great lifelong friend. And he mentored me a lot in the ways of Excel and spreadsheets and learning how that world works. So I ended up starting to assist with things like commissions and forecasting and, getting exposure to these other ideas and concepts. So I moved from training and enablement into a full-fledged sales operations and business intelligence position. So At that point, I overhauled all of our commissions. I created our forecasting strategy. I helped us go through two CRM transitions, Pipedrive to HubSpot, and then HubSpot into a Lightning deployment of Salesforce. So I think the key to my success at Eat Club was I never said no to a challenge or an idea or a project. Did I always know what I was going to do before I started? No. But I had learned how to research, how to teach myself, how to become self-sufficient, and how to ask for help or leverage other resources. So once the pandemic came, Eat Club, and most food tech companies, your revenue drops to zero overnight. So we went through a period of, strategic evaluation of ourselves, pulling back the hood on our systems, figuring out exactly what was going on and how we wanted to build for the future. I ended up moving out from Eat Club, went to a giant, global company, publicly traded in the data warehouse and data integration space, and learned what it's like to be a little cog in a big machine. And that's not what I like. I like startup life. I like the pace of work and having a role where the effort I put in actually makes a difference, that I see the impact in other people's lives, that my opinion, my voice is important and valued. So one of my compatriots from Eat Club had found Hungry Marketplace, had been recruited by them, and learned how they were so gritty and intuitive to find new ways of generating revenue throughout the pandemic. And as a result, ended up doubling in size. While other food tech solutions disappeared, went out of the market altogether, they were growing. So he got my attention. He's like, I need somebody to help me build this thing. We had so much done at Eat Club and we didn't get to finish our story. Like, come with me, Hungry. We're nationwide. We've got all these cool things. People are going to start coming back to the office. Like, the pandemic is going to calm down. And we need to be ready for hyper growth. All right, sign me up. So that's how I ended up here at Hungry Marketplace.
All right, cool. And I have some questions based on what you just discussed, but tell me a little bit about Hungry Marketplace before we deep dive into some of those things.
Yeah, so Hungry is awesome. We are a food tech startup, obviously, but we are building the premier platform for in-office food and employee engagement, client engagement and experiences. We have several business lines, the primary one being our food solutions, where we're operating currently in 10 major metros around the US and expanding to more markets as we speak right now. So that's everything that you've ever heard of for office catering, any meal times, snacks, all of those needs, as well as the products that developed out of the pandemic. So our virtual experiences team has launched essentially a new company and grown it into a multi-million dollar business in 24 months. So it's leveraging our incredible network of celebrity chef talent to create incredible personalized experiences for companies that want to treat their employees, to keep people connected while everybody's virtual, as well as apply a lot of value to client retention, client acquisition, and programs like that. So those are our primary business lines, but we also help with last mile delivery and logistics. Snacks is going to be coming on in a big way, as well as our cafe and coffee bar team helping to compete with the big boys and help set up on-site cafeterias, cafes, and a food experience for the enterprise level consumer.
Cool. So food, I'm all for food.
Absolutely. It's the best thing to cold call about. Nobody's afraid to talk to you about sandwiches or share their opinion on lunch.
That's also probably fun to market with. What's your favorite snack? And then do people, just piquing my interest, is it healthy, not healthy? What are people's snacks? Have there been any trends in the past 5 years?
The trend is everybody has their own taste. Everybody wants their own thing. So unless you can find a way to do everything, there's always going to be some people who are left out. But I think that's what makes us unique here at Hungary, is we have this incredible diversity of options in terms of chefs who are going to be preparing full-scale meals versus our snacking options. So if you have a healthier snacker who wants to have, you know, high quality ingredients, non-GMO, low sugar, no problem. But if you want Pepsi and Doritos, we can help you out with that too. Every company is different. And, you know, you look at the composition of a marketing team versus an engineering team versus a sales team, they're all going to snack totally different. So you have to make sure that your inventory can meet their needs.
Do I dare ask who snacks on what, which teams?
Well, as long as there's energy drinks, you've got marketing and engineering covered, and sales is going to be in there as well. Coffee, anything like that. Stuff to keep you going when the going gets tough. That seems to be the most popular universal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I hope coffee is also for things when the going is okay, because I drink 5 cups a day. So hopefully it's not just for when they stop. Okay, cool. One thing that you mentioned during, I guess, your background is that you learned on how to ask for help, which I think is actually really interesting and very pinpointed idea. So my question for you is, how do you ask for help? How can our listeners ask for help better when they're learning to be a better RevOps person or wherever they are in their career?
Yeah, I think the first step is you have to recognize asking for help is not a bad thing. Like, oftentimes asking for help will get you to a solution faster and help you bridge a gap that you didn't know how to approach. So there's a lot of different ways of asking for help. Usually my first person that I ask is Google. Hey, Google, how do I do this? You know, and see if I can self-solve my problems. But more than anything, just being willing to talk to anybody within your company, within your department, or especially outside of your department. You'll start to figure out who sort of the key players are. There's always a couple of people within each team that are just, they always make themselves available. Hey, I can answer questions. You hit them up on Slack. You keep it quick and simple. Point me in the right direction. And also make yourself available as that resource in return, right? There's very much a quid pro quo nature to a lot of business. So if you're asking for help of others, make sure that you're there to return that favor.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I struggle with asking for help, but because I feel guilty because I know how busy that person is. Is that something that you ever faced?
Absolutely. Yep. And that's my own problem too, right? Obviously I say, you know, you need to go out and ask for help and you can leverage your resources for success, but I forget that rule all the time. I mean, just yesterday I was talking to my friend who brought me over. I'm like, man, I am underwater. I've got a bunch of tactical stuff that needs to be done. And there's even more important strategic things that I'm struggling to get to. So identifying people that I can, you know, can I get some help here? Can I reset my timelines, my deadlines? Asking questions is huge. But when people are busy, those are probably the people that get asked the most questions. And that's why they stay busy, is because people are coming and asking them for help. So I always try to put in an out for them. Hey, I have this question, or I'm working on this project. Can you help me with this small piece of it? So they can understand what the time commitment might be. Or I ask them straight out, what's your workload right now? I've got some questions here. Can we schedule time? Right? Instead of just asking for, I need the answer right now via Slack, send it to me. How can I make this easy for you to help me?
That's interesting. It's like a soft kind of sell, if you will.
You got to come back to these people over and over again. You work with them. So
right.
You always got to make sure that you maintain those relationships.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Okay. So now you are head of RevOps at Hungary Marketplace. Are there other people doing ops with you? Or are you doing also the sales ops and the marketing ops and the customer success ops and et cetera ops? Is it just you?
Well, that's the nature of the beast. It's revenue operations. So it incorporates those three core functions. Anything from the moment you hear about Hungry Marketplace to the moment you decide to sign, you know, a multi-year commitment with us or go through a renewal, et cetera. Anything that touches revenue, I'm helping us to become more efficient, more automated, and streamlined. As the first hire, yeah, we haven't, you know, brought in additional resources yet, but we always have, you know, functional leaders who are very resourceful. They're utility players. So I get a lot of, you know, help from VP of sales, from, you know, the head of marketing. These leaders are in a similar boat where they come up with a strategy, they implement a bunch of stuff, and then we tag team on different projects. But very hopeful to grow my team soon to help provide greater levels of support.
Yeah, makes sense. And then I imagine that if you're the main or the only RevOps person there, that it's probably a hard to balance strategy versus tactics versus other tactics. So maybe we could talk a little bit of prioritization and about, is there even time to do anything beyond tactics if you're the only one there? Just for our listeners to know, tactics, when I'm referring to tactics, and I think Frank is nodding his head up because he gets it, but tactics meaning less like thinking and more like just changing a, not just, but changing a field in the sales force, or Frank can give more examples.
Yeah, this is the constant battle, strategic versus tactical. Like, to be a real leader in revenue operations, you have to be involved in these strategic conversations. You have to have a seat at the table. So putting yourself into those conversations is essential for your success, because you can help, you know, ambitious sales leaders with big quotas and big goals to build in a more sustainable fashion. You can, you know, be in a conversation and they're like, yeah, we're just going to measure X, Y, and Z. And you're like, okay, do you know how to measure those things? How do you want them measured? What unit is that? How are you defining these things? We should write some of this stuff down, because 6 months from now, we're not going to remember exactly what we did in this conversation. So that's the strategic side of the house. The tactical is, once you've created a process or implemented a change and update, maintaining it, helping new hires who are coming in to figure out, where are the resources? How do I interpret them? How do I turn this into action in the CRM? How do I use, you know, the different prospecting tools? So I am helping about 80 reps today. We've seen incredible growth lately. So our user count in the CRM is huge. So it can be anything from, like, you know, getting app mentions in HubSpot saying like, hey, it looks like this one's, you know, open and available. Can I, you know, start to work on it? But it, bigger picture, with this much work, how does prioritization happen? Well, I always create sort of a hierarchy of requests in my head. So top of the list would be anything that the CEO asks me to do. I report directly to him, so he gets my full undivided attention whenever he needs it. Typically, his requests are going to fall into bucket number two also, which is anything that drives revenue or protects and retains revenue. And then third is everything else. So CEO first, generate revenue, protect revenue, and then all the other stuff. That's how I try to prioritize my day. But the work piles up quickly. The tactical work piles up quickly. And if you find yourself getting pulled exclusively into tactical and you can never be strategic, you'll start to experience a couple of things. One, you'll probably feel overwhelmed and you won't enjoy your job as much because you're just doing. And those of us in RevOps think of ourselves very highly, and we're thinkers, we're creators. And so if we're just doing, checking things off of the list, it's hard to keep your happiness, your motivation in the role. And that's where, again, asking for help is important. Asking for due dates, timelines. Everybody comes with a request, but nobody really says, oh yeah, I can wait a week. Everybody wants their thing right now. So getting timelines, deadlines from them helps with prioritization as well. And just being very, very candid. Keep a good list of all your requests. Be very clear in your communication. I have X, Y, and Z that I'm working through, and then I can slot you in after this. So setting expectations with people. And then if you get totally, completely swamped, that's when a conversation with whoever you roll into. Here's how I'm prioritizing this. Here's all the things that are on my list. Do you agree with this? Like, let's realign around everything in the RevOps world. Maybe we need to move a couple of things back and forth, but at least I know, one, I'm going to be doing what my primary, you know, customer wants, and two, they have line of sight into the volume of work, into the types of requests and asks. And then when I can come and say, hey, we've got a dozen strategic things and 40 tactical. If you want to grow us and move the company forward, we got to get through these strategic things. So I'm going to need a tactical asset to help me get through this stuff. You know, keep the lights on, sort of maintain our tools and systems, help with onboarding so we can get these things that really move the needle, get them defined, documented, and rolled out.
Yeah, no, that's, I think, really good advice for, I think, everyone, even experienced RevOps people. So right now, your day, what percentage is falling into buckets on average?
I'm in a swing right now towards much more tactical, and I'm starting to build up a backlog of my strategic tasks. So I'd say right now I'm about 70 or 80% tactical, 20% strategic on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, like, sometimes the goal would be to be 40-60, 50-50. Like, what is, like, a RevOps person's goal for strategy? And again, goal doesn't mean that you're upset now, but it's more of a, like, ideally, if we have all the resources and what you'd like to be in the future.
I think that depends on where you're at in your career. For myself, I know almost a decade in now, and being in this role as I'm the head of revenue operations, I want to be 80% strategic. I'm happy to jump in and take care of some tactical things, but I want to be a strategic thinker because there's so much growth potential in our marketing and our sales and our client success teams that are being built out. Now's the time to really get into, who are we? How do these teams function? What do we want to achieve? What do we want to measure, and how are we going to do it? That's so critical to us achieving our growth. And that's what makes me happiest, facilitating those conversations. We're getting documents and requirements and putting it all together. So for me, I really want to be swung way in the opposite direction of how I am right now. But, you know, I work through this and it sort of ebbs and flows through the month. Beginning of the month, I can be more strategic. Towards the end of the month, it's very, very tactical. Close out the month and then start the next.
Yeah, I imagine, I was talking a few months ago with Jason Reichel. He was an advisor at Go, or he was an evangelist, or now he's an evangelist at Go Nimbly, and he on the podcast, and he was mentioning that it's really hard to focus on strategy if you only have a few people doing RevOps, because then you have to have someone that does tactics. 5 years ago, who was the person doing these tactics? If RevOps is a generally a relatively new position, who was doing these tactical things and maybe strategical things 5 years ago?
5 years ago, either it was being ignored a little bit, or it was on the shoulders of, like, the sales leaders themselves. You know, sales directors, VPs, CROs were responsible for creating and executing against their own strategy. And maybe they could pull in an analyst or somebody from another team or from finance to help try and back some of the decisions up with data. But it was typically up to the sales leaders. So now being able to have partnership where they're like, okay, I'm going to turn on my strategic thinking brain and have a really in-depth conversation with my RevOps person or my RevOps team for an hour, it's much more efficient because they can get out what they're trying to envision. And if your RevOps team is good, they can also sort of help you find the truth. Like, you have an idea, but you don't have it totally fleshed out. RevOps is really there to help facilitate idea creation and defining it and turning it from an idea into reality. Before RevOps, it was, you know, maybe somebody would have a random analyst or somebody who was just like good at tools and systems and would help out. But it was all on the sales leaders.
Yeah, it's interesting. And okay, cool. Before you mentioned that the number two thing that you listen to the CEO, and then you also make sure it's attached to revenue. Forecasting go under revenue, or does forecasting go under as part of sales, but helps with revenue, but isn't directly revenue? I was curious about that.
Forecasting is 100% revenue. It certainly is in my world. Now, the world of food tech functions a little bit differently than traditional SaaS. There's a couple of different ways that companies can model how they want to go to market. But oftentimes, you know, you're going to have higher operating expenses because you're going to be sourcing food, you're going to be figuring out delivery, you have packaging, all of these other things that need to be paid for before you deliver your product to the consumer. It's not like, hey, we just need, you know, 50 licenses set up and an implementation fee. So our forecasting is very closely tied to revenue, because when a deal closes, that annual value or that monthly value doesn't come in one lump sum. We have to then go and earn it every day as we're executing. So being able to accurately forecast when new customers are going to come online, it directly impacts what are we going to see in the bank account and what can we do with those dollars to help continue growth.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What is an example of not revenue for the RevOps function?
So not, if you're doing stuff in RevOps not related to revenue, you're probably doing it wrong, because revenue's in the title. So things that are sort of revenue adjacent or, you know, turn into revenue, I think the technology stack really falls heavily in there. Being able to create a cohesive ecosystem of tools that's not so many that it becomes overwhelming for reps, and that the tools are properly integrated between each other. I mean, there's a huge difference between implementing a software and optimizing a software. So, you know, through my career, I've seen most tools are 100% implemented and like 40% optimized. So it's how do I make sure that we're using all of the features? What are the different things that could add value? There's always going to be like immediate wins that are super apparent to a salesperson, but they don't have time to like dig into a tool and research all the things that it can do. So a RevOps team, and specifically like a systems analyst, a big part of their job is driving adoption of the, because you're going to unlock additional value that way. For example, I have an intern working with me right now from San Jose State in the entrepreneurship program. It's a great, great program, really top quality students. And I gave her access to our ZoomInfo account. I said, hey, I need some help. ZoomInfo does a million things. It's huge. It's like trying to read a dictionary and retain all of it. I don't have bandwidth. Even though it's fun, I can't justify spending my time there. And she went through and was digging through different company attributes and how to automate different things and workflows. And we've seen a huge improvement in adoption of ZoomInfo. I've got more of my users in there on a daily basis. They're utilizing their credits. They've set up saved searches and workflows. And we found some really unique searches that help us find highly qualified prospects better than we did before. The way we're using ZoomInfo 60 days ago was like, we have a general idea of our ICP, and this is who we're targeting. The way we use it now is, I actually know that they are a fit, 100%. for our product. And now I know who I need to go and talk to. And look at that. They were created in HubSpot this morning automatically and then enrolled into one of my sequences. And that's in big part due to an intern who had some bandwidth to figure out how these tools work and how do we make them better.
And ZoomInfo, is that, let's say a salesperson or a VP sales buys ZoomInfo, then would it still be as much under your plate if it's something that they even bought without RevOps?
Yes, it should be. You know, anything that's going to be supporting sales teams, even if it's just part of the sales team, you should have a RevOps person involved with that. Even at the evaluation stage, especially at the evaluation stage, I should say, the way a salesperson looks at a tool is totally different than the lens that a RevOps person looks through. And I'm always surprised how, like, salespeople, when they're being sold to, they don't see the tricks and the things that they do when they sell to, like, convince a person. They're just like, oh man, it's going to be so cool. It's going to be perfect. I'm like, you're a salesperson. You do this to people. Where's your sense of, like, you know, you got to have a critical nature. You got to be a little skeptical. It's healthy. So that's where my role comes in. So when you say this is a native integration, does that mean you're using Zapier? And they're like, oh yeah, usually. Okay. So it's not native. Okay. So it's going to require extra work. But yes, anything that's going to be supporting a sales team used by a salesperson, no matter what their seniority or responsibility, that should be under the purview of RevOps.
Yeah, that's hilarious. But she once read, she was reading recently a New York Times bestseller of a therapist talking to a therapist, and she's like, I know she's playing these games, but I need to speak about it anyways. Like, I know the strategies that she's doing, but it's still good. It's still healthy to speak about it. And so I guess it's just funny. Some people notice it, some people don't. One of my favorite things is when I notice my friends talk, like, who are salespeople, talk sometimes to their friends like they're on a sales call. I'm like, oh, I know that strategy. I'm not a sales guy, but I read some negotiations like blog post, and I know that you repeating the last few words of me of what I said with because you were a little confused gets me to talk more about it. Like, I get it.
yeah, and it's a strength that RevOps people start to develop. I mean, who gets sold to more than a RevOps person or like a VP of sales? Like, I've actually found a lot of my experience that I've gained over the past like 5 years from being sold to helps me talk to our reps, helps me, provide advice, particularly when it comes to, like, we're developing sales training and methodologies and rolling those out to the teams. Being able to say, like, hey, I know you guys have sold a lot of deals, but I've bought a lot of things. I've evaluated a lot. I've seen good salespeople and bad salespeople. Let me help you. Take it with a grain of salt. But I've evaluated over 100 SaaS tools. I've managed, dozens of them. Let me help you and give you a view through the buyer's eyes.
I love that. Like, best practice from the other side.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Cool. I think we'll have to do another podcast then about those top 10 things that you learned from those, from being the buyer. Let me do one of them. What is one thing that you can think of that you have seen from the buyer perspective that maybe some of your sellers miss the most? Can you think of one of the top one or one of the ones that just is on top of your mind?
I mean, the biggest one is just being an active listener. Like, and that's hard. It comes with time, becoming conversational and being able to just talk to somebody. But I oftentimes will, oh yeah, we're thinking about doing this and we're developing a strategy around how we're going to, survey, prospective clients and new clients. And I leave it very general. It's high level and it's an open door. And they're like, oh, cool. I'm glad you're doing a survey project. So what's this? And then they change, like, they could have dug in, asked me 3 or 4 more questions. I'm often surprised at the lack of questions asked in general. obviously everybody knows and you ask first, second, third level questions, but I've been on a lot of sales calls where I'm asked almost no questions. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, how's it going? Build rapport. Here's a demo. Hope you like it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. So, okay. So let's talk to close off today's podcast. Maybe three tips of advice for people that are trying to break into RevOps that haven't yet. And then three pieces of advice for people that are the sole lone wolf in the RevOps at their organization.
Okay. All right. Off the top of my head. So if you want to get into RevOps, I would say don't be afraid to just try. Like, you look at the job postings and the list of required skills is massive. You need to be CPQ certified, a Salesforce administrator. You need to be proficient in Tableau and you need to write SQL. And I've tried to learn SQL. I've never successfully learned it. And I've never actually needed it to this point. Not saying that it's not important, but were I faced with a challenge that needs SQL, I'm friends with people on our tech team. I'm friends with people in, you know, other departments, and I can ask for help, right? Learning how to learn something new. Like, everybody's got a different learning style. Some people have to learn through doing. There's visual learners, auditory learners. Figure out how you learn things and become very good at it. Because 9 times out of 10, and particularly since it's like a newer field, companies don't exactly know what they want to do. They got a lot of questions. There's interesting things. They're reading cold emails from other companies. Don't be afraid to jump in and get started and work on your people skills and just becoming somebody that people like to work with. Because in this role, you will be expected to work with all sorts of people in different departments who all have different things that they care about. So if you can figure out first how to talk to anybody, and then secondly how to ask them questions to figure out what they care about, your life will be that much easier when you get into a RevOps role. So I think those are my top three for somebody who wants to break in.
Cool.
All right, all my lone wolves out there. I feel you. We're in this together. We're fighting the good fight. Asking for help obviously is the biggest one. And we talked about asking for help internally, but I think one of the biggest areas that I've succeeded in just getting help is from our vendors. And this has happened at every company I've worked at. You have CS people who are, you have a dedicated rep. Why don't you leverage them? Why don't you talk to them? What's the relationship like between, that vendor company and yourself? When I got here, obviously we've been working with HubSpot for a long time, but we had been focused on how do we build out our tool, but we didn't spend as enough time. How is our relationship with HubSpot? And I've been able to build great relationships, friendships almost with, our account rep, our CSM, and they're providing me best practices. I don't have to search the knowledge base. I can ask them and they'll send me 3 targeted articles that exactly answer the question. You can even get some free consulting out of them. As an individual contributor, help them feel your pain a little bit. Hey, I really care about this. I like your tool. I want to use it well. I'm running out of time. Can you help me do this? Can you build a report for me so that I can see it? You'll get them to help you. Just become their favorite admin. You don't have to do anything special. There's no extra, sending gifts or presents, but like, be a partner that they want to work with. One of my favorite things is using Zoom info, figure out who their boss is, and then send their boss a note that says, this person's doing a great job. I'm needy and they're meeting my needs. And I just thought you should know that they're awesome, because getting recognition at work is huge. And that took me 10 minutes. What else? Take time at least once a month to look at your workload and redo your list of your strategic things that need to be done and your tactical things, so you can be keeping an inventory on that, so you could be always as efficient and effective as possible. And then lastly, make sure that you continue to find ways to have fun and interact with your salespeople. It's, you know, nobody parties better than the sales team. Nobody has a better happy hour. And if you're skipping it, you're missing an opportunity to build relationships with them, so that when you're getting ready for the national forecast or a board of directors meeting and some things are out of date in the CRM, instead of being like, these freaking salespeople, they never listen to me, they don't follow the process, you can just hit them up. Hey, Ryan, can you help me out with this, man? Like, hey, no problem. Oh, I'm so sorry. It won't happen again. You know, put in the work to make them understand that you're not an adversary. You're there to help them and help the company grow. So these are the kind of things that I try to do to help make my life easier when I'm a one-man team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of them can actually be used for every position. I even try to reshuffle my prioritization once a week. So that's amazing that you have it, I guess, in your head that you're able to reprioritize it if they're at the month. So yeah. All right. Well, Frank, this was awesome. I learned a lot, and I hope our listeners or whoever is new to this podcast learned a lot. And if whoever's listening is interested in joining as a guest on the podcast, they can reach out to us at Deal Hub. And Frank, it was awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Barry. And anybody who wants to, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'd love to make some additional connections. The RevOps community is great. It's very welcoming. We all want to help each other. So if you're getting started or you want to get pointed in the right direction, or you think Hungary sounds like a really cool place to work someday, I'd love to meet you.
Love that. All right. Have a good night.
Thanks.